Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August 10th, 2001. In the Creekside room this morning is Eunice Scarfe. Today's session number is SCE-2001-10, and it's titled Love Happens, Stories of Relationship and Solitude. Let's listen in.
Largely. And the comment yesterday was that much of fiction writing depends on having lived experience, that is, lived the gamut of the emotions. Not something exciting, not something wild, not something wonderful, not travel, but the inner life. And the fiction writer draws on the inner life to understand the inventive character or plot. A second thing I said yesterday, and then we'll carry on today, is that when you are writing out of memory of what happened to you, it's selective. The nature of memory is selective. Just ask your sister to write her memory of last Christmas and put it next to your memory of last Christmas, and the versions will not be the same. Yours will be right, of course. Memory is incredibly selective. Mm-hmm. I think what happens, and I've been figuring this out for some years, this is my tentative belief today, that the fiction writer works on the boundary between remembering what was, their experience as it was given, and out of that works out of desire for what could be, what might be. And that's the invention. Does that make sense to anybody? Mm-hmm. It took me 10 years to figure it out, so I didn't expect you to understand it. But you can remember how it was.
The boundary, I like the words you just used.
I had a father who didn't read fiction. I can write the memory of growing up in a home where there was no fiction read. I can take that memory of being a child in that home at that time, and I could begin a fiction story imagining a father who handed me books, read books mm-hmm. with me, talked to me about books, took me to the library, gave me books for birthday and Christmas. Do you see a shift? I remember me, myself and I, my home. I remember to be a child. I have a desire for a parent who loved the word. Fiction, writing, story. Now, Hans, if that makes sense. So then I can invent. I can have the same fireplace, the same chair, the same rain in Seattle. But I can start inventing. What would it be like? Now, I do that in order to make a story, because the story, and some of you, none of you might be interested in story invented. That's fine. Then what I'm saying has nothing to do with you. But if you come to a point where you want to invent, you can take what you know of place and time and person and emotion and invent character and invent action. Now, we could spend 12 months once a week on this subject, and we're doing it in 2 minutes, and you're a very good class. It's permission to invent where you don't know. That is not lying or misrepresentation. It's moving into the inventive. You've all read novels. I know you have. They were written by somebody at some place at some time who's combining lived experience with invented, the experience with the imagination. And that is as much as I'll say about that unless there's any more questions. I wrote a story once. There was a minister's daughter in it. I'm a minister's daughter. Somebody read it and thought, therefore, if there's a minister's daughter in it, everything else is documented factual truth. Is that a little bit misunderstanding of how we write? I took what I knew of being a child of the church and invented a text. And it's very hard to persuade somebody who thinks you're writing documentary biography, a mirror to the past. Very hard. And I invite you all to take that horrible leap. I invite you all not to show anybody you know what you've written until you've shown another writer, at least one other writer who understands this boundary. Let's all take a deep breath. It's a hot day today. We're going to write for 15 minutes. You'll be invited to read aloud if you want to. You need paper, and there's a pad up here. Here it was. Who needs paper? I'm going to have to send you. I'm packing up to go, so that's
paper.
One thing that went. The rest of you, please, both feet on the floor and take a minute just to breathe deeply into your belly. We sometimes breathe down here, all the way down to the belly. At your own pace, four or five times. quieting yourself, I'm inviting you to go into memory. That's a long journey. Your shoulders don't go up and down, just your belly goes up. When you're ready, would you put the date on the top of the page? It's Friday, August 10th, I believe. We're at Colden Village, and I invite you every day that you write to date it, so you have a record of your own journey. I said today that we'd look at questions of, I said the word love happens, stories of relationship and solitude. Even in solitude, there's love. The gamut is enormous in looking at this. It gives me an excuse to look for poems that address relationship. You can have relationship with your work, with an individual, agape, filial, eros. Is there one more there?
Just three.
There's just three. Agape is that love in general for your fellow creature. Filial is father, is parent-child, is it not?
Brother, Philadelphia, filial.
Well, where does mother and father come into it? Do we put mother and father under that one?
Well,
I'm making up new rules. Agape is for your fellow creature. Filial will be brother plus mother, father, daughter, the relationship in family. Can we do this? And eros is that romantic, sexual, the one and one relationship. We only have one word, love. Are we poverty stricken? I think so. So there's a huge territory you can cover here, and I don't want to talk any more about the subject in general. I want to read to you from a few poems. If you've been here before, you know I invite you to have your memory stirred by what I read and move into your memory, if you like, using a line from this poem. And that's not plagiarism in this class, it's a springboard. Before we begin, if none of these invite you into memory, I have a backup for all of you. And that is to write this morning, from the moment you woke up, everything that went through your mind, everything that went through your spirit, emotions, and everything you did. That will take you till next week to cover the last 3 hours. The amount that you thought and felt and remembered and did. So this is a backup, all right? If you get a blank page and you feel stuck. Not only that, but I invite you to use she or he. So if I'm talking about myself, I say, she heard the alarm. She saw the sun at the top of the mountain. She woke remembering it's her last morning in Holden. She thought, I don't want to get up and end this visit. You understand? That's an invitation. You can do that every day of your life, as morning pages. But today, it's what you do if the others don't take you down a path. All right, let's listen then, please. I read about three, and if you're ready to write after the first one, you just begin right away. This is from Stanley Kunitz, who was poet laureate of the United States. Maybe still is. He's 92. He's just put out his collected poems. Stanley Kunitz, K-U-N-I-T-Z. And I invite you to use the form in this poem. Some of you may have heard it. I think I read one of these this week. It's called A Blessing of Women. And this doesn't need to be just women, it can be anyone. What he did was pick a list of people that mattered to him, and he writes a paragraph blessing for each of them. This is invitation number one. This is how it works. Bless Zerua Guernsey of Castleton, Vermont, who sheared the wool from her father's sheep, who washed, carded, and spun it into yarn, who steeped it in dyes concocted together, spun squares until they bloomed with fruit and shells. Most singularly, she embroidered a noble blue cat on one of the squares. And then each of the 80-odd squares, being different from the rest, she created a patchwork quilt, executed in the years of her prenuptial flight. This is all old-fashioned speech, very deliberately. And she finished the quilt in 1835 for her ill-starred wedding day. And that's got a sad ending. But he's remembering the women who came before him. If you do this one, did you follow that? Bless the woman who made the quilt, who sewed the patches, who did the cat, who made the quilt just in time for her ill-starred wedding day. We don't know why the poet thinks it was ill-starred wedding day. We don't get that story. That's the end of the blessing. So if you wish to do this one, you can begin, bless. And you can bless those people with whom you have had relationship. You can go back as far as you like. You can go in the present. You're writing a blessing. For one or more, you might have 10. Bless the mother who taught me to sing. They can be short. They can be long. Bless the cat who kept me company every night in my childhood. Okay? That's one of the easiest to do. You're going back in memory for the people with whom you've had a relationship of affection, love, commitment. If you want to start, you can do it right now. Now, I have to do this one for Margaret Atwood, who has a very, very wicked wit. How many of you know Margaret Atwood, a Canadian writer? She's our most prolific writer, our most accomplished writer, our most awarded writer, and I would be terrified of speaking to her. She's totally polite, but if you... Margaret Atwood. Atwood. A-T-W-O-O-D. She has a way of making you think twice about what you just said. That's what I really mean to say something so stupid. This one is fun, and you try this if you like. And this is for fun. You can listen for fun and not use it as your prompt, or you can write like something like this today. It's called Happy Endings. And this is fun. John and Mary meet. What happens next? If you want a happy ending, try paragraph A. So in this one, I'm going to read paragraph A to you. But in this one, you can do a relationship you've had and write it in this form. John and Mary meet at Holy. They go down the bus together. They stay by the lake. Do you have any stories like this? All right, this is her version. John and Mary meet, fall in love, and get married. Now, that's a lot of story in one line, isn't it? Yeah. They both have worthwhile jobs, which they find stimulating and challenging. They buy a charming house. Real estate values go up. Eventually, when they can afford live-in help, they have two children to whom they are devoted. The children turn out well. John and Mary have worthwhile friends. They go on fun vacations, like to Holden Village. They retire. They both have hobbies, which they find stimulating and challenging. Eventually, they die. That is the end of the happy story. Do you know anyone's life like this? Well, then she starts with the stories where there's some darkness. There's no darkness in this one. This is plot. It's like a Harlequin romance. It always ends happily, right? A little bit of trouble always ends happily. Well, I'll just read the first couple lines of B, but I invite you to use the John and Mary, write the plot of your life and get it done in 15 minutes. The plot up to now. Or the plot of a previous relationship. B. Mary falls in love with John, but John doesn't fall in love with Mary. Have you seen this one? Have you lived this one? C. Is John, who is an older man, falls in love with Mary, and Mary, who is only 22, feels sorry for him because he's worried about his hair falling out. She stays with him even though she doesn't love him. She comes up with plot after plot after plot, some of which you may have seen or lived or observed or invented. You know what I'm asking you? Do at least one plot line.
Does she elaborate on B and C?
Yeah, she does.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to read from it. She does get carried away. There's another way of doing brief. This is called brevity. We do this as an exercise in my writing classes. You're going to write soon. And this is writing a whole novel with two-sentence chapters. This is fun, and I invite you to do this. You're going to start memoir. And you can do it. It's like an outline. She was born in Iowa, chapter 2. She went to college at Luther, chapter 3. You understand? We're reducing it down. This is fun. If you're overwhelmed with story, this one brings it down to the... Well, chapter 6 of this example goes like this, called Love. Marie and I get along pretty well. She always wants to go to the movies or bowling. Sometimes when I'm not with her, I forget what she looks like. End of the chapter.
And this is if you want to do something brief and relatively lighthearted. One last example. And this is a strange one to use for...
Okay, I'll throw out another one. You can write a letter to somebody with whom you're no longer in touch, but have unfinished business. That's a serious one. Somebody with whom you've had deep feeling, who is no longer in your life, or who is in your life, but you have unfinished business. Okay, that's a serious one. Important one. You might not send the letter, but you find language today to finish a conversation where you had deep relationship. I'd like you to listen to this one. I don't know how you can write about this. Yes, I do. But it's so beautiful. It's a teacher watching her music student and thinking of his relationship with the love of playing. Listen to it, please. It's called Twinkle. He comes to my door, this proud blue boy, jauntily clutching his scratched violin, eking, twinkle, twinkle, little star. Drip by excruciating drip, he plays Twinkle. His mother beaming above the din of notes. And I wonder how long before he knows the strength of his silence. How long before he knows a half rest. How long before he knows the pull of an F sharp yearning for a G. How long before he knows the power of a bow on the bridge, a tip of a finger on the fingerboard, the shaking of a wrist on a whole note, the slurring of a bow, a sharp staccato, a tightly wound pianissimo. How long before the applause ends? And he is standing there, cap in hand, violin askew, polished shoes, standing and squinting at the audience far away. 12 notes and a bow he holds in his hand today, like a basket of loaves and fishes, watching them multiply before his eyes. This is one of my students in Edmonton who has written like this from the moment she put pen to paper. Do you see her looking forward? I in love imagine him into his love with his playing and his ability to play. Now, this woman has never written a piece without putting food in it. She's a Mennonite, and like, food is big in that tradition. And I started reading this, and I thought, first poem I've ever read from Becky with no food. Do you remember the food?
No, dishes.
Mm-hmm. It works perfectly. That's again. How long before the applause ends, and he is standing there with 12 notes and a bow he holds like a basket of loaves and fishes, watching them multiply before his eyes. You have to read the gospel to get the reference, right? Us in the inside, we get it. So I have given you a wide range, and it's frustrating, and that's deliberate. To be a writer is to choose. In fact, it may be the only definition of a writer is to choose. What am I going to reveal on my blank page? There is no assignment here or in any other part of the writer's life. Anyone stuck beyond bearing? I can help you. You could, and but one last one, it was a really nice one to start. These are the friends I have had. That's love. And list them in a list and start talking about as many as you can in a paragraph each. All right? These are the friends I have had. I can still remember Peter Trucano, great priest. So if you want a very concrete one today, these are the friends I have loved. Names and a paragraph about each. Now, if you have 15 minutes, sit anywhere you like. I'll call you when we're done and we'll leave. Interrupt yourself, draw a line, and answer the question, what was I thinking or feeling while I was writing this? What was I thinking or feeling? Draw a line. What was I thinking or feeling as I was writing this? Here's where you put down your reflections or your feelings and a note to yourself, what can I do next with this? Or who needs to see this? Who would be informed, comforted?
accompanied by seeing this. The writer's job is solitary. You stop and talk to yourself. Me, myself, and I are just now going to reflect on what I did. And you can always put, well done. That's not just the news. I have a friend whose computer says, well done, Gloria, every time she closes a file. You draw a line, you write below the line, a sentence, two or three. Sometimes it starts a whole new story. My whole purpose in teaching, one purpose in teaching, is to generate new text. How can you keep this going? Ask yourself, what more do I have to cover here? Where should I go next? Story is the place for feeling. It rarely shows up in government reports or university abstracts. Story is the place that contains feeling, speaks to feeling. So you hold the feelings that you felt as you wrote. As soon as you're finished with that, I'd like you to take a minute, that's 30 seconds each, to tell your neighbor what you wrote about. Not read from it, but describe what you did. Just to touch base, ground ourselves. Tell somebody near you, what did you do? And then I'm going to invite readers to read. One of you can represent that corn. That's optional. That's optional. Do you mind if I tell people that you're the youngest one in your class and how old you are? I won't do it if it's not okay. I won't tell them. This is the youngest student I've ever taught at Fulton, and I've given her a special poem in honor of her courage in starting so young. She's 11. What's your name?
Micah.
So nice to have you this week. And if you're the youngest one next time, I too will give you. Some below the line, let's hear from, that's optional, right? Nobody has to read that. What's below the line for anybody?
Mine was your romantic memories.
Yours was romantic memories.
Good. Yeah. I let you know one of the
cards. Pardon?
Let go and let God.
Let go and let God is below the line. Here?
I was feeling everything I was writing.
Okay, I was feeling everything I was writing.
I like, I do the blessings and I like to focus on the, felt good to focus on positives. And it was interesting how I went into like my relationship to solitude and myself. And, I like to continue to do blessings. I find it very positive.
Your relationship with solitude is a lifelong relationship. There's no beginning and there's no end of that. It's a relationship with self. And if you go into that discussion, if that shows up there, pursue it and see what that's about. There are many books being written on solitude now. Spiritual nature of solitude. Anthony Storr has an old, not an old one, but 20 years old, Storr, The Nature of Solitude. For writers in particular, it's never a committee. You're alone. It's me, myself, and I. So you become very acquainted with solitude. Anyone else below the line?
Okay.
Circle the people that show up in your piece and write a letter to one of them. I'll never know if you don't do it. So that every, this is for all of you, no matter what piece you write, you can circle the names. If you want to generate more stories, circle the names of the people, write a letter to each of them, even if it's half a page. Or circle the names of the people and let them tell the story you just told. That's really scary. You have to give them the right to say their side of it. Anybody ever tried this? My mother gets to tell the story of bringing me up, and then I get to tell the story of my mother bringing me up.
Are there two different versions there?
That's what I'm talking about. A novelist always has to give equal time to everybody.
Was Margaret Atwood or someone else from Canada that wrote this book? It was from the woman's perspective, the story. She went on this trip, and the man wrote his perspective at the same time, and they're so different.
It sounds like Margaret Atwood.
Yeah.
I don't know if she did it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for writing, and we'll spend the rest of the time listening to each other. I say thank you if you read. I encourage you to read aloud so you can hear the words back and own them. Not for us to approve or disprove, to cheer or groan. Just for me to say thank you for reading. While somebody reads, would you jot down one line that you like? And we echo those words back to them with no comment, just as if it were an echo, so they can hear another way of getting their words back. So you really own your words. How many of you felt disorganized in writing? Anybody? Okay, that I would really encourage you to allow and say, good, I got disorganized this time. Because the story comes out in its own fashion, not by the structure we've been taught to think it maybe should look like. A sermon has 3 points, sometimes 4, sometimes 2. The writing you're doing in first draft comes as it comes, and I can't encourage you enough to let it come out disordered. Probably more order there than you know. Who'd like to be first? We'll now listen until the end. Here. Your name is
Melissa.
Now, we need to be able to see each other. Would you mind getting so sort of like a circle? You don't have to get uncomfortable. It's just nice if the person can see you.
You have to. So maybe you misunderstand. Maybe I misunderstand you. Maybe the filter between us is so full of dirt we can't even see each other anymore. But you don't want to talk about it. Why? Are you afraid that once the filter is gone, we'll have been wrong for all these years? Perhaps I'm afraid. I'm attached to hating you. I'm dependent on you, on hating you. Maybe I'm afraid to take away the filter, to bond with you. But we don't need to bond. We do need to care. Well, that's a crazy idea. We care so much already about each other. If we didn't care, we wouldn't work so hard to hate. Or am I afraid that you don't care? Am I the one who cares and hates, and you just don't like me? Do I make it that easy? Do I make that easy? Am I easy to make fun of, easy to complain about? Or maybe it's you. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with me and you don't care about me. Maybe you use me as a pawn in your own unsatisfied life. Maybe that's too judgmental. I don't know that you're not satisfied. I do not know you, and you maybe don't know me. So how can I love you? I guess I can love you, for the mother you have been to my beloved Grady, for the person I know you have brought him up to be.
I interrupt you. You're rarely finished. Thank you. And below the line, I remember you said the words were...
confused, frustrated, sad.
What words did you hear? I asked you to drop down a line, and if you intend to start a writing group like this, please remember that the content is never addressed. No discussion of the content in a writing room. We give the words back so she hears how she has expressed herself. We don't address what. It's entirely yours. The inclination to start talking about the story is huge. I know it's huge. If you meet with others, finish the writing, go have coffee, and then if Melissa says, I really want to talk about this some more, okay. But as you're reading to write, several of you have talked to me about reading together. Watch us. We're not going to say one word about the content. That's Melissa's. It's her story. It doesn't belong to us. We don't enter it. We don't take it away. But we've heard how, the how. So some words to let her hear how she's expressed it. Do you have some?
Filter. Mm-hmm. Filter between a circle of dirt. We can't even see it.
And she came back to that 2 or 3 times. A very powerful image. Image. Remember? Thank you.
Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with me.
Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with me. Thank you. Another one?
And maybe we misunderstood.
Maybe we misunderstood.
Like the doctor with the plague.
Like the doctor with the plague. You came up with quite a few images. I would encourage you to go back and circle those. We have the filter, we have the doctor with the plague, and I think we have some more. Maybe you use me as a pawn is another image. What a game of chess. At the end, close to the end, she says, I can love you for the mother you were to raise. Now, I think you're the one I said, see if you like to speak as if you were the person you're addressing. Let her write a letter back to you. See what happens when you're ready, if you want to. Does that sound risky?
Interesting.
Good. You give voice to the other person, let her speak back. In a sense, you're writing a dialogue that you may never have and she might never see, but it gives a language to this confused feeling. Okay, thank you for reading.
What I do next? I'm looking at this side of the room.
Meaning for you. I'm looking at this group of you. Meaning for you. Dan, thank you. Please write a phrase down. This can often work as a first line for your next piece of writing.
I wrote your one sentence blessings to my family. Bless my father, who every Sunday wore a brown suit with a pocket watch that I used to listen to tick during the sermon with my head in his lap stretched out on the pew. Bless my mother, who grew tan every summer, hanging sheets on the line, and taught me to cut and paste and make scrapbooks on rainy days. Bless my sister Sue, who didn't quite fit in our quiet family. She, the cheerleader, softball star, who won the lead in the school musical year after year. Bless my little brother David, who was not to be found one day when he was 8 and sent us all into panic, but was later discovered to have walked around the neighborhood collecting broken watches at people's doors and was found fixing them for fun.
Thank you, Dan. Let's go with the line.
That it was just fun to do this and that I felt connected by the
room. How much story there is in one line? Let's hear words for Dan.
Sent us all into panic.
And make scrapbooks on rainy days.
Leading the school musical year after year.
I want to hear more about the scrapbook and the magazines that were being cut up. I want to hear more about where this takes place. This is the last, the other appropriate thing, besides giving the words, saying, I want to hear more about. She's not sitting in judgment or commenting on the story. I want to hear more about where this was. Nebraska, Iowa, Maine, New Jersey? You don't have to tell us, but I'd sure like to know. Oh, come on, tell us.
Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota. You know, for everyone who knows Minnesota, should there be anyone in this room, if you were to say anything that locates it in Minnesota, you immediately double the size of the picture you're painting. It's a really slick way to say a lot. So every Minnesotan said, aha, I know it. You can get tan hanging sheets in the sun in Minnesota, among other places. Okay, thank you, Dan. Another one here? Or did you want to leave?
Sister who didn't seem to fit.
Pardon?
Sister who didn't seem to fit.
A sister who didn't seem to fit. I heard watches two places, did you?
Yeah.
I listened to his gold watches in the first one. By some miracle, you know I just told you to stop. By some miracle, watches in the last one. The brother goes around collecting watches to fix. It's a nice little balance. It looks like you planned it. You couldn't have planned it. Who else would like to meet? Anyone? Gretchen. Write a line down. One line is enough. Just to echo that. Thank you, Dan. I hope you do a whole lot more of that form.
I tried the novel in two sentence chapters.
Oh, great.
And I got to chapter 7. You know, me a little longer than two sentences. Chapter 1. She was born in some country that took her very, very young mother and father in because they didn't belong anywhere else. Chapter 2. She grew up following the snow. She remembers many cabins, some motels, an occasional normal home that was so hard to say goodbye to. Chapter 3. She and her sister were much more serious than their playful parents. She and her sister had anxious, pale eyes and incessantly made fountains out of anything. Marbles, ceramic animals, even peas on the plate.
Say that again. They made incessantly. I just didn't hear
they
that.
They made incessantly made families out of anything. Marbles, ceramic animals, even peas on the plate. Chapter 4. A brother appeared by accident. They were all accidents of some ancient rhythm method that never seemed to serve anyone very well. He wove the fragile family together. It was a job that he carried all of his life. Chapter 5. Whenever she tried to be ordinary, chaos would intervene and send her spinning, crashing, whirling off into the unexpected. Accidents, tantalizing invitations, the love of irresistible men, and the fascination with professions that no one else took seriously but her, paid poorly and drew her to the company of odd companions. Chapter 6. She was a very, very good dreamer, but she never could find a town or even a country that would love, feed, and clothe good dreamers. Chapter 7. She made her own tribes, founded small villages, left people behind who never forgot her, and people who tried very hard to forget her. She always wondered what would have happened if she had stayed longer. Chapters. Yes. I stopped there.
You wrote the line?
I couldn't write words. I just was very excited. Very, very excited to see what other chapters were there.
I think you said it again. I couldn't write. First thing you just said now.
Just then. I couldn't write anything more right then. I was just reveling in where will be in the next chapter.
So you couldn't write any more in this chapter?
No, it was just like I was irritated with you for stopping me.
What would happen? About time somebody said chapter 8. You can skip lunch and keep going.
Yeah.
How many of you did chapters like this? Anyone else? Do you see now what you could do with it? One line. Words for Gretchen. Below the line. Oh, I couldn't write fast enough is what you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Words for Gretchen.
Anxious, pale eyes.
Anxious, pale eyes.
My brother appeared by accident.
Some ancient rhythm.
They were all accident.
He whirled the family together.
It was a job he kept all his life. Anyone have a sibling or oneself that has this job to keep everything together? Hands. None of you are the bind us together? That's okay. Okay, the two of you who bind everybody together, that's your job to write more about. More words for Gretchen. Anything else?
Our grandchildren.
They make families out of everything, even the peas on the plate.
occasion our normal home.
Off into the unexpected.
I like the part about the good dreamers that could never find a place that could love, clothe, and feed dreamers.
Gretchen, you've got more story here. I think I prepared you to go to lunch. Or eat alone, keep writing. Thank you. We're going to have a couple more. If I have unfinished business with any of you, that's my website, and on the website is how to reach me. And a few of you have asked me questions I haven't answered. The courses I teach, the next one in the States that I'm sure of, Los Angeles in November and Santa Fe next May. And somebody's asked that. All the rest of the information is up in there. Let's hear another one. I'm trying to remember the announcements I have to give you. Who else? Eric.
The last thing you read, I'm not sure if it's the poem. All summer, one radio station barely reached across the lake to me from Thunder Bay.
I can't hear.
Okay, sorry. All summer, one radio station barely reached across the lake to me from Thunder Bay. Few sang about us. Instead, I heard you in guitar fuzz, in two notes sung too close together. In the afternoon static, after work, before the sunset and the signal cleared. Then, I left and wandered the glacial rocks, harder than teeth, but smoother than shoulders. I heard you in creaking docks, trees bent by wind, and waves sent by storms two states away.
Below the line, you were still out writing. Did you write any reflection? What was that like to write?
I didn't have a chance.
That's okay. Words for Eric, please. And let's have it really loud as if we're shouting across the mountaintops.
Smoother than shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Wandered the glacial rocks.
I heard the song too close together.
I heard you in creaking docks.
Before the sunset and the signal cleared.
Is there fuzz? Is there ambiguity here? I heard you. Do you know who you is? Do you need to know who you is? What? I'm telling you, you don't even know. I heard you. Can each of you use that line? I mean, can each of you write a line like that? I heard you. Not now, but could you do that? I heard you. It evokes any experience you've ever had. I heard you.
All right, I'm saying this partly because I think Eric's writing in a poetic form, and one of the differences between prose and poetry is that prose, you're laying out who, what, where, when, why, how, and what happened next. It's narrative. And poetry often stops time. That night I heard you across the lake. You moved to other places. And far less obligation to give us what happened and then and then and then than to create a moment of experience and its aftermath or consequences. I was going to say one more thing to Eric. Barely reach across the bay to me from Thunder Bay. I'm curious. I want to know. Where were you? Just because I'm a Canadian, I can ask this question.
Do you know Isle Royale National Park?
Isle Royale. Mm-hmm. How many of you know Thunder Bay was Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. At least you know it's up there. Sometimes I come down to the States to teach and I would say, Canada, you know, up there between you and the Arctic. But this is really encouraging. And that you all could identify. Let's take one more if we have time, I think. Let's take take one more. We'd like to read. If you feel like you'd like to, you'll know because your stomach is going a little bit funny. Who are you?
Okay. I often read, so if someone else doesn't, then I...
You gave them time. Let's let them take care of themselves. Okay. They don't know. Some of them don't know you read yesterday.
Okay.
This is, Cardi.
Yes. Should I take it as a sign that the men I have loved have all loved me no more than a friend? And why is it that the love of a friend is somehow less than that of a lover? In fact, it is more. The love of a friend is for forever, or at least close. It is usually something that does not have an ending, even if it fades. Of course, the greatest lovers started as friends, and that is why they are some of the greatest. My friends who I have loved and perhaps longed to call a lover have been men. They have been men whose names begin with the same sound as my own name, K. Is this significant? I make it so, and so it is. It starts with Ken. Ken was the one with the skateboard on campus, with the radio show on Tuesday nights, and the partially shaved head. He's the one who wore a different object around his neck each day and used it often as a conversation starter. Ken is the man who liked to participate but never lead. He appreciated originality and uniqueness. He knew what true beauty was, as well as hurt and pain. Ken loved me, and I loved him. And I used your words. But because of the poverty of words we live in, I cannot simply express how different that love between us was. Soon after Ken, or was it even during, Casey entered the scene. Could there be a kinder soul than him? I have not met one since. Casey was the one who... And I'm glad you're coming off, because I didn't know how to answer.
Well, I'm glad somebody's glad I got them. Carrie, below the line.
Love is hard to talk about. I had a hard time getting started. I felt a little sad at my past experience and my desire to be in love someday, where it is returned. And I want to continue with the other case on the case.
How many of you know what she's speaking of, that boundary between friendship and love, or that blurring, or that similarity? You have a story yourself. The nature of friendship, the nature of love. And if so, enter into it. That first paragraph could be used as a prompt. That is, why is it friendship is forever? Or so, reflecting about friendship. And then she starts the stories. You hear how that structure mm-hmm. works? If we worked together for 12 months, I'd start asking you to look at the shape of the text. There's shape and dance, the first one you heard, because it's like a pebble put down. Bless. Second pebble, last third pebble. This one is reflection of friendship, and then story begins. Name the people standing. Words for Carrie, please.
I make it so and so.
That was
beautiful.
Good. Oh, can they borrow that one? Do you mind?
I borrow the words poverty.
I didn't hear.
I make it so and so it is.
I make it so, and so it is. And if you all want to use that as your first line tomorrow, when you are will write at 10:45 as usual, will you not? I make it so, and so it is. I say it is so, and so it is. There's a line from a story saying, I have told this story so often I've come to believe it myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could borrow that one. That's from Madeline Radikoff, a Mennonite writer. I have told this story so often I've come to believe it myself. And she's giving a story to her sister. And the story is why her father planted blue flax. And it's obvious that it's invented to give the sister, the younger sister, a vision of the parents as tender and loving towards each other. And she says to the sister, I know how much you love secondhand gifts. I will make a story for you and pass it on. You'll be the second. You know, it's mm-hmm. a play on secondhand. I have told this story so often I've come to believe it myself. That'd be a title for a week series, wouldn't it?
Who said that?
Radikoff, R-E-D-E. It's a Mennonite name, R-E-D-E-K-O-P. Madeline. I've told this story so often. I really... Do we have words for... More words. We stopped on that one.
I have mm-hmm. less than a lover.
Less than a lover. Back here, Eric.
The sound at the start of my own name.
Soon after Ken, or was it during? that form of speech, you realize the privilege you have in memoir of writing as you talk, of the asides. I called it the other day, I don't know if you were here. Soon after, well, maybe You understand? You're doubting yourself, and you're putting the doubt on the page. And it's a very entertaining narrator. Not entertaining, funny, but engaging narrator. Who will put both the truth and the questioning of the truth both on the page. Use it.
Because of the poverty of words.
Each of you has a piece this size in importance and in significance for you. What you hatch, for reasons I don't understand, what you hatch in 15-minute writings when we're together, in my mind, are seeds to grow something. No, you're not finished. Yes, you have a beginning. And I invite you to find a listener who will simply give words back. Say, I don't want praise, I don't want blame. Just let me hear my words back, please. I like the sound of it. The other thing you can do when you get back to telephone places is to phone yourself on the answering machine and read your piece to yourself. And then listen to your words on the answering machine. And I'm not being facetious. I encourage you all to hear yourself as well as record yourself. Most writers I know send nothing off for publication unless they've read the whole thing aloud, to hear its rhythm aloud. Well, I'd like to keep you another 25 or 30 hours. I'm not going to. It's been a pleasure working with you. Some of you I've seen every day, and some just today. It is an enormous pleasure to hear a piece of your story. I'd like to close by giving you one last prompt to take away, and this prompt you can write every single day for the rest of your life. It's the a poem I gave to... Give me your name again. Micah. It's a poem I gave to Micah, and you'll see why when I read it to you, but it's one all of us can use, and it's making the visual appear on the page. You'll see. It's called Friends, and I'm reading it because we end with friends. Part. It goes like this. I am drawing a picture, and I would write that line down. That's the line that you can use every day. I am drawing a picture, and then words you paint the picture. Your family photograph, the house you lived in. Listen to it. I am drawing a picture. My house is in it. A jagged yellow sun hangs from the blue strip of sky. I'm drawing a dog now. His tail is wagging. Can you see it? He wants to be my dog. Now I'm drawing the sound of a train far off. I will scribble in some smoke. I might want to travel. Your house is in my picture. It is leaning across our street. I am putting the word pow and electric zigzags where our chimneys almost touch because the houses are leaning so close together. In this picture, I am waving from my window. You are running up our walk. A bird is flying off the edge of the page, singing. Anything can happen in pictures, you know. I don't need to draw our faces. We will never forget each other. Well, that I send you off as gift. I won't forget your faces, and I won't forget your stories. And I will think of you writing, scribbling off there in Minnesota and the one other state you're from. There is no end to story. They can't ever retire you. They can't ever fire you. You're beginning a process you can use to the end of your life. I want to thank you very much. I'm done. What I encourage you to do is to read to one other person if you have time. To look at your neighbor, look her in the eye, look her in the eye and say, do you want to read right now? She says we're supposed to hear our neighbor's piece. And if they say, no, can't be bothered, well, that's
my daughter from Narnia.
You have to get your daughter from Narnia. If you can, read to a partner before the day is done and just have them listen to the words and beat them back to you. I won't know if you don't do it. I sure would like you to do it, but... Oh, this is it. I'll give it to you, and then pass it back to Eric. I want you to see how it's on the page, please. Oh, and you can copy it if you like. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A lot of people I've heard say this week that they really appreciate what you've done, and I sure have. Thank you very much for that.